Street View Podcast is part of the Dallas Public Library's Homeless Engagement Initiative, dedicated to increasing community awareness of issues related to homelessness. The opinions expressed are solely those of the individuals and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Dallas Public Library or the City of Dallas.
How do you want to see it? What do you want to do? You got it all figured out, straight from your cube. Life's a musical, maybe a carousel. How do you want to see it? What do you want to do? Perception starts with selection. The same streets you walk on, they carry their own view. This is Street View. Father God in heaven, we come right now in the name of Jesus Christ, God. We thank you for love and for life, God, for peace, God, for joy, God. We thank you, God, for the lessons that we learn, God. We thank you for the wisdom and the knowledge that you have bestowed upon us, God. We ask for understanding, God, of how to live in unity one to another, God, doing what you would have us to do in this place, God, living on this place, this earth, God. We stop what we're doing to glorify you, God, and say thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. And we ask, God, that you give us the guidance and the discretion of how to do it, whatever it is that you would have us to do, God. We once again say thank you in Jesus Christ's name. Amen. How y'all doing out there in listeners land? This is Rashad Anthony Dickerson, a.k.a. the podcast host, the host of the Street View Podcast. Today, tuning in, you're in for a treat. We have quite a few individuals in the studio today. We got the captain of all times, of all, how would you say that, audio engineering. We got Ryan in the building. We have the one and only Mr. Malcolm Varner. Mr. Malcolm Varner from episode one will be joining us. Quite a few shows he'll be here because he is the face of, how would you say that? The face of the advocates here at the library. Also, today on this show, we have Mr. Nicholas. I call him Nicholas. We have Nick. Nick is one of the individuals who receives services and also is somebody who's doing the work release program here at the library, as well as at some local homeless shelters. Also, we have on the show, once again, Mr. Wayne Walker, executive director of Our Calling. So before we get into the show, I want to talk about some different things that involve homelessness. We are talking about the endeavors of the homeless here. But one of the things that came to mind was how, from the homeless man's point of view, his enemies, or not even just his enemies, but the factors that he has to face. One of those things is me and Nicholas, we talk often, and one of the things we talk about is how, if I'm homeless, sometimes I have to fend off my goods or whatever the things, the necessary amenities that I have from other homeless individuals. And because Our Calling, being one of the service providers that provides amenities and provides those things that are necessary, you know, way back when they used to actually serve outside and serve food and different things. And so they dealt with this on Saturdays. I believe the third Saturday they come out and they give out resources. But I think one of the greatest dynamics that I've seen is that Our Calling has a staff, whereas individuals who try to do this or regulate a giving to homeless individuals don't have a staff. So they don't have what we call a strength in numbers. Also, we're looking into these things, and I just want to kind of talk about it. A story that I heard, or not even a story I heard, but one I experienced. So one time I was up at the homeless shelter, and it was getting cold. It was getting really, really cold, and I had a strong desire for long johns. And so I had been waiting, I guess, months on end, actually. And so somebody came, and they were giving out long johns. And I was just like, I was fascinated with the fact that my desire had actually been granted. It was one of those, wow, I never really even said that out loud, but God kind of provided that thing for me. So as they show up with the long johns, I'm standing there and I'm watching as the people get in line and people are getting in line and the crowds are being pushed. And I'm actually standing off to a distance And I'm watching this as a young man walks up to the end of the line, walks up to the front of the line, and then reaches over the person that's standing in front waiting to be served and reaches into the back of these people's van. And so as I see this, I'm saying to myself, that's not right. That's not cool at all, because if somebody takes their time out to give to us, we who are homeless, then we should, first off, at least be grateful. But then second off, be respectful and responsible enough to know that there's nobody regulating. So somebody's got to, we have to not overwhelm the person, because this person's giving out of their car. You know what I'm saying?
Like, take it on yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You're giving out of your car.
You got to have, like, I want to call it common sense, but respect for the person. You know what I mean? You can't just scare them off or they won't return. You know, they won't do the favor again.
Right.
It's kind of like biting the hand that feeds.
So somebody sticks their hand in and the guy gets scared, because now what you're doing is you're breaching into his personal space. You're going into this man's car. And so he's upset and he's like, yo, man, y'all need to back up or I'm leaving. And so from the homeless man's standpoint of view, I need this. I am not going to allow somebody else the opportunity to take from me when I'm about to receive something that I need. Now, mind you, this isn't Rashad, but this is how I see it from that person's point of view, because I'm standing off at a distance and I'm watching the whole play. So like the dude said, he closes it. Boom, he closes his door. He gets in his car and he drives off. He drives off. The guy who was at the back of the line, that skipped to the front of the line, that reached into the car, is now fussing. Man, y'all always do that, man. And he used some vulgarity. You know, y'all always do that, man. People come around there to help us, man. And yo, man, y'all always stepping in the way, man. Y'all, man, y'all don't never back up. Get out the way, man. Show no respect. So in my mind, I look at that whole story and that dynamic, and I say to myself, you can't really, like, being in my shoes, being homeless, you can't really see that. You won't see that. Those are the stories, or those are the cultures that Jasmine originally asked me about. That's something that's not cool, to be selfish in a situation or in a state of desperation. So being that everybody here has seen selfishness and have seen desperation in some sort or some form, I'm just going to open up the floor. And if anybody has anything to say about that, please chime in as you will.
Yeah, nobody likes it when we have to have rules and we have to limit people, and you know, it's such a pain in the butt, but there are so many people that try to take advantage of every bit of grace given. And sometimes when people show up downtown and they pass out stuff, it's helpful. And sometimes when they show up and pass out stuff, it's not helpful. It's stuff that either the homeless don't need, or it provides a commodity that'll be traded for something to support an addiction. You know, we go to over 1,200 locations in Dallas. Right. We're not just stuck in one little building. And I can't tell you how many crack houses I've been in, and well, there's one wall lined full of shoes, another one full of blankets. And I know which that ministry passed out blankets last week, and now they're all sitting here in this crack house, you know. Wow. The shoes from that, or they'll, you know, the big thing downtown that'll happen in December, people will pass out shoes, and you can walk outside the event, and you can watch an army of people walk into South Dallas with a, you know, stack of shoes in their hand. And they're not going to put them on their feet. They're going to, you know, trade them for a nickel or something. There are those people that have, and, you know, because we've been doing this for a minute, you know, we've been those guys on the street and have had people run up, push us out of the way, try to knock us down to get what we had. And it's usually not the people that need it because they have a physical need. It's people that need it because they have a chemical need. You know, it's somebody wanting to. I took a group of kids out on one of our search and rescue groups, and our groups go out every week, but I took a group out about a month ago, and I had this high school kid standing there with this box full of hygiene, and it has a stack of toothbrushes and toothpaste and lotion and Band-Aids and stuff. And, you know, I told the kid, and the kid's young, you know, and I told him, okay, one per person. Well, one cat comes up there and takes a handful, grabs every single toothbrush out of the box, and then every single razor out of the box. And then everybody else standing in line says, well, we don't get any. And I'm like, well, that guy's pockets are full of them. Well, why did he take them? Because he has a bunch. He's a real hygienic guy. He's going to shave himself every 20 minutes, you know, and brush his teeth every five. No, he took them because he's going to trade them, you know. Those people that take advantage of the system make it difficult for everybody. But it's kind of like the speed limit signs and the seatbelt law, you know. If it weren't for those fools, it wouldn't ruin it for the rest of us. Things would be a lot easier. It's kind of like having a library card. If people would just borrow a book and bring it back, we wouldn't have to have this thing where we send a SWAT team to chase after them because they didn't bring their copy of the book back, you know.
Are there SWAT teams here at the library?
The library has a SWAT team just for books, you know.
No, man, I'm kind of glad you jumped out, Mr. Wayne. I wanted to ask a question to you. So last time you were here, you talked about dysfunction. The definition of homelessness was based upon the dysfunction that one has because of sin. And you also talked about how our calling's primary goal is passing out the gospel. My question is, why do you feel the gospel is the most necessary thing for individuals, especially in your line of work dealing with homeless people, homeless individuals?
You know, when you see a guy drowning, there's a lot of things you can throw his direction. Maybe I'll throw a sandwich towards him. That'll help. Maybe a toothbrush or a razor or a blanket. When a guy's drowning, he needs to be rescued. And I look at this situation, the reality of homelessness and the dysfunction that really is behind all that, in a different perspective. Maybe I'm not saying it's the best perspective, it's just my perspective. We all look at it from different shoes. You know, I'm not a guy that has never been around homeless guys. I'm not a guy who's never had homeless people living in my house. You know, I grew up in a foster home where we had 67 different kids placed in and out of our home. I've been around homeless folks since I was 10 years old. And so what I got to see was not the struggle to find a sandwich. What I got to see was the struggle of, how do I not kill myself because of what happened to me? How do I live with all the pain inside of my life that I want to self-medicate with something I can shoot, snort, or smoke, you know? And so when I look at a friend who's struggling on the streets, the problem is not what's written on the sign as he's asking for money. The problem is not what line he's trying to get into. It's to get the next pair of thermal underwear or socks. Right. The problem is much bigger than that. And many of the solutions that we provide are just Band-Aids. I'll give you an example, and I'm going to step on toes by saying this. Housing First is a great program, and it has shown amazing success throughout the country. But the implementation of it through many cities, including Dallas, has been housing only. So they look at the need of homeless. Well, let's provide the home, and now he's not homeless, and now that problem is solved. You take a guy that's been on the street for years, has been evicted out of every place, can't hold a job, has no relationships with anybody, nothing healthy in his life, a criminal background longer than his arms. You know, he doesn't know how to take care of himself. He's got undiagnosed mental health issues, physical ailments as well. And you throw him in the most crack-infested apartments in Dallas with nothing but a roof. You've done nothing but relocate the problem. Housing First is supposed to be first, and first, by the definition of the word, means that there's a second and a third. And when we try to Band-Aid a problem by relocating it in an apartment without providing the necessary support services for that individual, we've actually created a much bigger crisis. And that's where you have situations where, you know, the guy lives in an apartment and doesn't know why he got in trouble when he sold a microwave and the stove so he can go buy some cigarettes. Or the guy gets cold at night and he builds a bonfire in the living room. Or, you know, you visit somebody in their 70s and 80s that waited in a housing list for, you know, a year and finally got their apartment. No one's ever visited him. No one's ever checked on him. And now some crack dealer just moved in their apartment, put his fist through both of their faces, and is using it to run drugs. You know, Housing First has to be a part of a bigger holistic approach. And now, I think after making a lot of mistakes, people in the city are starting to recognize this. You know, you look downtown and you see a homeless guy who doesn't have a house. Let's just give him a house. That'll fix the problem. Just like seeing a guy who's cold, let's give him a blanket. That'll fix the problem. Now, that's a symptom of a much bigger set of problems in someone's life. And that's why I come back to the gospel. Now, I'm a religious guy. I have two titles on my business card, and it's not just something we write down. It's what I do. I'm a pastor, and I'm executive director at Our Calling. And the reason why I feel both of those are important is because without a foundation of faith, a dysfunctional life can never start to begin the process of healing. Let me give you an example. You've lost the last 30 jobs. Okay. If I give you number 31 without trying to figure out why you can't keep a job, I'm wasting your time and mine. You've been evicted out of every place you've ever lived in, and I give you apartment number 12, and we've never figured out why. You've got diagnosed mental health issues and you're not taking your meds, or you've got undiagnosed mental health issues and you're living on the street. A foundation of faith puts us in a community of people that care about us, can hold us accountable, and teach us why. Why should a guy worry about taking a bath more than once a week?
I definitely agree with that, because one of the things I say to people all the time about being a Christian is, no matter where you go, you have family. And it's crazy. That means if it's a casual conversation at a bus stop, or if it's an elevator ride where you just say, you know, somebody may utter out the words glory to God, or somebody promotes God and does not promote themselves in the midst of just common everyday conversation. There's family there, and you have that. And I agree with you in so many aspects. I just really, really wanted to get an alternate perspective, because I do agree with some of the things.
Well, let me say in one more thing. It's because of our faith that we get up and go out. It's because of our faith that we've been under every bridge in Dallas. It's because of our faith that we pick people up. And I mean, I just got here because I was taking two people to a clinic. And before then, I was visiting other guys under a bridge who just had their stuff thrown away. It's because of our faith that motivates to do that. Now, because of my faith, I'm going to love anybody that walks in the doors at OC. I don't care what color, what flavor, what gender, you know, still can't figure those things out. I don't care. Because of my faith. And because of my faith, I'm not shoving Jesus down anybody's throat. Jesus is my Lord and Savior, and he's changed me, and I'm going to use that as I love people. But it's because of my faith that it motivates us to go and do.
I just have a question, just to get some clarification, to make sure that I'm not missing out on anything. And so I guess the question is, are we saying that there's a direct correlation or direct association between homelessness and dysfunction? Because when I think about homelessness, it's not necessarily always because there's some sort of innate dysfunction within a person. There could be people who lose their jobs, and so they don't have enough money to go ahead and pay for their, you know, pay for their housing. In many instances, when people come to shelters, they're only there for a couple of weeks because there was some, you know, crises that happened in their lives, and they need, you know, a temporary place to stay. And so I'm just seeking clarification on that correlation between dysfunction and homelessness.
Well, dysfunction is not a bad word. And I would say every person is a little bit dysfunctional, some more than others. So I wouldn't say dysfunction is a curse word that we use to label somebody as you're so broken and messed up you can never get fixed, as though this is a permanent state. You and I both have had dysfunction in the way we manage money. That's why we've had debt before. We've had dysfunction in the way that we drive. That's why we've gotten tickets before. Okay. We've had dysfunction in relationships. That's why we've had breakups before. Okay. Every person on the planet has dysfunction. You know, someone who just lost their job and just lost their apartment may need a lot more than just how to manage money and how to keep a job. Usually, though, those are symptoms of a much bigger problem. Just like if I go to the doctor with a sniffle, he's not going to give me a bigger box of tissue. He's going to try to figure out what the underlying cause is. And at OC, and, you know, this is our opinion, and you know, you don't have to agree with this, but we see some of those underlying issues as a systemic dysfunction that is in most people's lives, and they don't recognize it. They don't recognize the need in the areas of their life that they just need some training on, these six or seven different areas.
Nick, what do you think, Nick?
That was very well said, by the way, Malcolm. Yes. Very well said, thank you. And I have to add to his point.
Yeah.
Because, like, oh, I'm sorry. I have to add to his point. like, homelessness is not always like, you know, you were pointing out, you know, they have a rock problem or, you know, cocaine addiction or alcohol, whatever. I like he said, you know, they might just lose a job and be stuck mm-hmm. there. But see, I want to add on to that point. That happens, right? And what happens when you get sucked into the black hole that is homelessness and homeless shelters and the routine and the lifestyle?
The lifestyle is why you and I are here.
Thank you. And see, my thing is it's not okay. Like, I don't have a drug problem. I drink here and there, but I don't feel like I have a liquor problem. My thing is that you get used to sitting down. Like, what person doesn't like to take a break? You know, don't we all have breaks in our jobs and stuff like that? Like, what is this? This is a break from life, you know? But then, you know, you wake up, you realize where you're at, you know? And you're like, okay, well, I got to do something to change this. And before you know, you're so, what's the word I'm looking for? Caught up in a situation that you can't see a way out. So you just do what? Stay there, you know? And you're like, okay, well, I'm just going to let something come to me. And then eventually these things, these resources do come to you and you're like, what do I do with them? And like you're saying, like people need training in like a couple of fields or whatnot. Like, what do you do with that? And who was there to teach us these things? You know what I mean?
My question to you, Nick, because right now I'm looking at the work badge and I know you're headed towards truck driving.
Yes, sir.
Can you tell us a little bit about that opportunity and how it came to you?
Actually, it was more like, okay, I am not a Christian, but I believe in God. You know what I mean? Because I've seen Christians do just as much evil as they do good. You know, absolutely. I'm sorry to say that.
Absolutely.
I believe in a relationship. I'm just getting something off my chest real quick. I have a relationship. I don't believe in religion, you know. But here, how that came along is it was basically kind of like, you know how God did that with the PJs? Or what are they called? Thermal underwear, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, with the God did
that. Well, see, the Lord, with the God, yeah, that guy. Yeah, so what he did for me is I was telling him, man, I need a way out of this bad boy. It needs to be quick, easy, and I don't need to, you know, do a whole bunch of work to do it. And I need good money. And my dad keeps telling me it's going to take years and stuff like that. So eventually, you know, I'm job searching hardcore, you know, going on the internet, going to places. And, like, the only jobs that I can really get right now are, like, little $10 hour gigs. You know, it's not bad, but it's not what I want. Yeah. You know what I mean? I want to have structure in my life. I want to be able to pay bills and live comfortably, you know? Absolutely. So, if some reason, like this job website popped up, 3 truck driving schools, and it said 3 weeks, you're on the road. All you have to have is your driver's license. Here's a phone number, call it, see what's happening. So, you know, I called the phone number, and the lady was like, yeah. And I told her everything that I've done, you know? And she's like, well, that's fine, as long as, you know, your PO is okay with it. And if you get that, if you get those city tickets off your license, as soon as you got that paper copy in your hand, you go to school the next week. So, you know, I was like, okay, man, well, that sounds like a plan. Let me take care of that. And I hate community service because there's one thing I love more in this life. It's my time. You know what I mean? And I don't like to give it away for free, you know, and that's what it is. But if it is to better myself, I'm going to do it. And that's basically, yeah.
So that's how the opportunity arose.
Absolutely.
I've had 3 guys in my office in the last week tell me they're going to go to truck driving school. I think that's an amazing opportunity. You know, we're always looking for different job opportunities for the homeless, and it's really challenging, especially if you have a criminal background, especially, you know, some people want certain kinds of education, but usually it's the scarlet letters on your criminal background that make it most difficult.
That's even with housing.
You know, there are homeless guys that get pulled into so many illegal jobs just because they're looking for a buck. So I had a guy come in my office this last week. It's a woman, actually. She wants to go to truck driving school. And the truck driving school she wants to go to, she has to pay like $100 or something deposit to do it. There are guys that will drive downtown in buses, vans. They'll pick up homeless guys. I know a group of guys now that are driving 18-wheelers out of Fort Worth. They have no kind of license. They don't have a CDL. They ain't getting nothing. But they're paying these homeless guys so much an hour just to drive a truck from one town to another, from Oklahoma City to Fort Worth back, just to make some bucks. It's just like the guys that pick up guys down to walk papers or to cash checks or to commit phone fraud. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I have a question. Do you feel like they are exploiting the homeless?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have so many cop friends. I'm begging them, please. And not friends, yes, but sir. Cops that I know that we have a relationship with, the ones that don't hate us. And, you know, trying to really talk to the police officers, would you please enforce these laws? And, you know, so a van drives downtown to pick up a group of homeless guys, promises them $100 each to go cash a check.
Yep.
So when somebody gets busted, the homeless guy
goes to jail.
Yeah, the van, they're waving as they go back. And so you have so much of the – if you actually did a survey of the homeless community, how many of them have check fraud charges, it's a huge majority.
Yes.
And it's because people are taking advantage of them.
Shout out to Marvin, man. Shout out to Marvin. Marvin is locked up on a fraud charge. And it's crazy because he was one of the individuals who had graduated from Victory Outreach Program. And he was doing good. He was trying to do the best. And he had a little spooga-wooga up at the bridge, old girlfriend. And decided he wanted to get some money for them to, you know, do whatever they do as family and love and couples. And somebody hit him with the lick. Yo, man, why don't you cash this check for me? Cash the check. Sitting on the fraud charge.
We have these guys that come to our place, and we can always tell when they drive up what they're doing because they're walking around the parking lot trying to talk to people. The one thing now is the phones. So we'll pay you to go into a store, sign up for a brand-new phone, then we'll give you $100 for it. And, you know, you're going to rack up $2,500 in late fees by not paying anything on that phone for a year because you sign up for the service, you sign up for the data plan, you sign up for the phone.
God got myself.
Yeah, guy gets $100 in a phone, and you're stuck with your credit is destroyed for the rest of your life.
Yep.
Yep. But, you know, for $100, it sounds like, you know, 10 minutes worth of work. Man.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah.
Doesn't 100. Sound bad.
What do I need to do?
And I don't have the cell phone at the end of the day. That guy took the stolen. He's the one with the stolen cell phone. It's kind of like food stamp fraud. You know, how many people get food stamps and how many people sell them? And, you know, why don't they convict on this stuff? Why don't they do, you know, any kind of... It drives me crazy.
It's crazy, Wayne, bro. It is really, really crazy because I have friends who have done that. I have friends who get picked up to go drive at the auction. And then I really, really wonder right now, am I performing to my worth? Because I'm working a little rinky-dink job, and I mean, I'm hurting. Like, I have back problems, and they've been bothering me for 2 or 3 days. And then at the end of 2 weeks, when I pull back $200 from working 2 weeks, you know, is that what it's worth?
It's so hard though to find a solution to this. Let me give you an example. I met with Bill Thompson earlier this week, yesterday actually. He's of course the executive director at Union Gospel Mission. They're trying to open up this new facility to do job training, and it'll teach people how to do construction work, how to clean hotel rooms at the Omni, and you know. All kinds of electrical work and sheetrock work. And they've been trying to open this place forever. I mean, they get so many stuck with so many city permits, and the city comes out of them and makes it so difficult. And then they had to, you know, it's difficult to open up a system to help individuals that want a job and to train them. You know, City Square's got 2 job training programs, which are great. But for many folks, you know, the thought of getting a job to work on computers or the job to work in a construction industry, there's a lot of people that would qualify for that. Now, at our calling, we focus on what is called, not even by us, but the most dysfunctional folks in the county. So people that, you know, can't take care of themselves, people that aren't taking their meds, people that are dying of some terminal disease on the street, people that are living in just the worst absolute conditions. Those guys, there's no way most of them could sit in a classroom, much less complete a 12-week course. So to try to find work for a guy that's even just looking for a minimum wage job, every business now is so corporate, you know, they're going to run background checks, they're going to have to do all the paperwork, and even just the ability to come up with an idea is so difficult.
Let me jump in here. And the work piece is important. And I think for most of us who are able-bodied and able mentally, you know, to go to work every day or however many times a week, is important. And it gives us a sense of who we are, you know, a sense of knowing about ourselves, and it gives us a sense of purpose, you know, and living, which I think is critical and important for most of us. And so whether that's job paying minimum wage or paying, you know, $25 an hour, I think that's really important. What I like to, you know, look at is and really address is this whole issue of affordable housing, you know what I mean, and affordable wages, you know. And I think that's a disconnect, you know, within our society. And so if we are having people who are making $7.25, you know, an hour, where is the housing that really, you know, meet sort of, you know, that income.
Right.
You
that know, alleviates right. and pacifies that person.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's a huge void. Yeah. And so that's one of the things that I think that, you know, we really need to be addressing as a society, as a community, to make sure that those people who are, you know, working jobs that are paying minimum wage are able to afford, you know, housing, which is, you know, a basic right and need, you know, for all of us.
It's a necessity. I talked on one of the shows about how you have the power of choice and the burden of consequence. So I could play the role of saying, okay, I'm one of you guys who is self-sufficient, who's autonomous, but then I have to worry about bills. Then I have to worry about responsibilities, things that I need to do in order to perpetuate the type of lifestyle that I want to live. Or I could take the road of, say, an individual who's homeless, and I could say, well, I'm going to lay back and I'm going to kick it and I'm going to chill. Then the thing that I have to worry about is the weather, because it's getting cold. And one of the things up at the homeless shelter we have is an individual who's pretty much like an enforcer. His name's Tommy. I don't know Tommy's last name. Tommy, what Tommy does for the bridge is he kind of gives common sense to the common individual. And sometimes he may have to enforce rules when rules are necessary. And sometimes he may just have to speak knowledge and wisdom as they are needed. And Tommy would say to us, listen, that hawk going to get your mind right. That means you're going to come up in here, you're going to follow the rules when the cold air starts to hit. You'll see how many individuals when it's summer. And he talks about something that he's always known, which is the culture of the homeless, because that's his job. That's where he's worked. So I definitely agree with you, because as one of my mentors told me, work is good for the soul. It's very, very good for the soul. And affordable housing is necessary. I need housing at this moment. And like I told you, I'm pulling back a check and I'm looking at it going, and if I make two of these, I'm still not meeting the requirements for living. One of those, let's say the requirements for an apartment is $600, and I've already given you a glimpse at what I'm making. I'm pulling back two after 2 weeks. How am I going to live? And if by chance I have an individual who is willing to help me, then how are we going to eat?
Okay, let's talk about some numbers when you talk about low-income housing and, you know, jobs and rates and income. The U.S. has seen unprecedented low consumer price index and inflation in the last few years. Some are saying that we're going through a state of deflation, or we're real close to that. Prices on things have not gone up. And I'm afraid that if we raise minimum wage, all that does is every time is raise inflation. So, you know, your $3 bottle of milk when we raise, you know, the minimum wage by $2 is going to skyrocket. Looks like right now gas hasn't been as low as it is now in 5 years. So I would love to see people get paid more, but it doesn't matter how much you pay people if everything else goes up accordingly. So, for example, you mentioned low-income housing. Can you find a place in Dallas for $450 a month? Yeah, you can. You can find $450, $550, all bills paid, efficiency apartments. But there are not many of them. And the ones that are usually are in real poor areas, very poorly maintained. You know, they have chronic problems in some of those places. And the reason is because, you know, we move in and we want to build these urban lofts in cheap areas. And we want to tear down these low-income housing to build this new thing. We did that with the American Airlines Center. You know, there was low-income housing there, and they tore it down to build the American Airlines Center. And now people, years later, are saying, where's all the low-income housing? Well, the place where we used to have low-income housing, you know, in South Dallas, they're tearing those down now. For example, we used to have the bunkhouse. The bunkhouse was 10 bucks a night, you know, 8 to 10 bucks a night, off of Irve, south of downtown. Well, because the Cedars have moved in and built all these urban lofts and new housing units down there, when the permit expired for the bunkhouse, you know, they fought to not let it come back. And even around there, some of the low-income housing places, they fought to have some of those shut down, because now that people have moved in this area, yeah, now that I drive in here with my fancy car, I don't want to see poor people, so let's see what we can do. And I know that's not the goal and that's not the motivation behind this, but low-income housing has slowly disappeared in Dallas. It has slowly been pushed out, and it's been pushed out by people that want to move downtown, and they don't want to move in low-income housing. So they'll build some fancy place. Well, to build a fancy place, you got to get rid of the cheap place. And if you got paid minimum wage, just to talk numbers real quick, $7.50 an hour, if you get paid 30 hours a week after taxes, you're bringing home less than $200 a week, okay? The cheapest places you can live in Dallas, there's a few motels, and they're $125, $140 a week. And for $140 a week, you go into a place that doesn't have handles on the sink, it doesn't have a toilet seat, you know, there's bed bugs and that kind of stuff. But to be able to live more than that, you know, you'd want to make more an hour. Absolutely. Well, to make more an hour, you do one of two things. You either raise the minimum wage up, or you get some kind of education where you can get a better job. Right. Well, for many of our folks, they can't get the education fast enough to get the job. Right. So if we turn around and raise the minimum wage on everything, then the fear is now that $450 apartment is going to be $550. And the food they were buying at Walmart for $100 a month is now $180 a month. And so there's not an easy solution to any of these things.
Well, those are all valid points. And just in terms of a high school education, I was looking at some program or reading something, but for someone who just has their, this came up during a staff training, a staff meeting, someone who just has their high school diploma or GED, they will make more than $500,000 person on average than someone without their high school diploma or GED. And so, yes, obviously that education is important. It's huge. So I'm a proponent of both raising the minimum wage and also for people getting, you know, enriching their education to the best that they can. In terms of affordable housing, you're absolutely right. So if we raise the minimum wage, naturally, you know, apartment prices are going to increase as well. Part of affordable housing is part of the notion of affordable housing is understanding that it is not market rate. And so there has to be some allowance within like our system for that.
Like a subsidy system.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, and there's a dozen of those programs in Dallas.
That subsidy needs to exist. And so you were talking about, you know, the whole housing first model that has been pushed all across the country. And we need to ensure that there are supportive services, you know, for those individuals who are accessing those housing units. So absolutely. And that's where the importance of permanent supportive housing and supportive housing, you know, comes into play, because, you know, by putting people in housing that have issues that need to be dealt with and addressed in order for that housing to be sustained, they do need those systems of support. But I think when we talk about affordable housing, we need to understand that we're not, you know, talking about market rate, and that they're within our system. The wealthiest country in this world right now, you know, we have to have that understanding, that allowance for people who aren't just, you know, at that level where, you know, we ideally like them to be,
but see,
or where they quote unquote should be.
I absolutely agree with everything you're saying. But we also go back to the original conversation that Rashad said earlier when someone's passing out thermals. Someone's going to reach out, push everybody out of the line, go to the front, and the door's going to be shut, and the guy's going to drive away because he's cheating. So many people get checks every month that are on the streets. And the majority of them are not on the streets, not because of those people that get checks, not because they can't find affordable housing. It's because they get their check on the first, and by the second, it's all gone, every bit. I have a friend right now at our calling. He's in there every day using our Wi-Fi. He's on the street because he just got his check, and the first day he bought a new laptop because that's what he really needed.
And can I say something?
Yeah.
To add on to that, if we looked at the number of people overall who are receiving checks, I would wager that they are that group of people that you're speaking of is a small percentage of that whole number overall.
Overall, so to that point, yes, but we're not talking about overall. We're talking about homeless people.
And I agree. And so that population, but the population of the people who are housed could very well be homeless if they were acting in that same manner in which you just described.
Yeah.
And so what I'm saying is that they're simply the what we're seeing in terms of the work that we're doing is a small percentage of the overall population of people who could be in that same boat. And so you're absolutely right. There are people who cheat the system in all sorts of ways.
Some of it's not cheating, unfortunate. Though. I mean, that's where I go back to dysfunction. A guy that chooses to sleep outside so he can buy the latest phone, or a guy that uses his check to smoke in the day he's smoked it all up, or a guy that decides, you know what, for one night I'm going to live at large. I'm going to get a nice room and a nice girl and a big stack of something to smoke. You know, that dysfunction behind it, even if we provide all the resources that guy needs, he may not have the ability to make the wisest choices just because he's never been taught. He's never been trained. He's never had a group of people. He's never had accountability behind it.
Now we're talking about free will, it sounds to me.
I'm not talking about free will.
And so for someone who receives this check and they go out and buy this laptop, or they splurge, you know, instead of paying their rent or supporting them, their housing in some way or another, if they are choosing to spend their money in that way, that is a choice. If it renders them homeless, you know what I mean? That's a choice that they've made.
That is absolutely a choice.
It's also a dysfunction in a sense. I agree with that. One of the stories that I heard, and this was in college from a teacher, Professor Derek Payne. Shout out to Derek Payne. He told me, he said, and he taught me this, and he was saying, if I gave you, for the purpose of this exercise, every candy bar in 7-Eleven is a dollar. I said, okay. He says, I'm giving you this dollar. Go across the street. You go to the store. Which candy bar do you get? Now you get to choose from everything that's in there, from Baby Root, from Snickers, from white chocolate Hershey's. What do you want? Which one do you choose? And the individual says, well, I choose the white chocolate Hershey's bar. And he asked the question, well, what did you give in order to receive that white chocolate Hershey's bar? And so that question comes in and you say, well, I gave a dollar. No, you gave the opportunity. You gave the opportunity to use that dollar for something else. So what I'm saying in essence is, yes, dysfunction in a sense, some of the things that you spoke about, Wayne, are some of the very key things that I lack. First off, I have to, let's be honest with myself, as a homeless individual, I need to know what it is that motivates individuals every day to reach out, to reach for the potential that they're striving for and that they're living in. Example, you're a pastor. I believe the same faith that you believe in. I believe, and you're an executive in an organization that's out to help individuals who need help. I believe in the very same faith. What stops me from being where you are? What is it that motivates you? Same thing with you, Malcolm. You're in a situation where you're an executive who's in a position to help individuals who need help. Well, as a homeless individual, I did not gather the intelligence necessary. As I grew up until this point, I have not gathered the knowledge, nor the wisdom, nor the understanding necessary to perpetuate a lifestyle that to some extent is of conformity. Because in some senses, you have your pleasures met. You don't have to deal with the AC, the air. You don't have to, you know what I'm saying? It's getting cold. You don't have to deal with your tent being taken. But you do have to deal with spreadsheets and things of that nature. So the things that are, I know that might not be, it might not be difficult for me. It's difficult for me to fathom because I'm not in your shoes. But understand that. Where I am, I'm dignified and I'm whole where I am because of God, because of the gospel message. That gives me a comfortable level of saying I'm secure in my manhood as a person because I know I am who I am. And the potential that I'm living up to my highest potential of understanding. Now, there are some things that I could better understand. There are some things like financial processes, for one.
Budgeting, planning, schedule, those things are necessary to the individual who really, really wants to get out of the situation of homelessness or to get out of one situation into the next. Education, that's where education plays a major part. But then there's the level of morality. You spoke about free will. There's that level, which we can't, even Martin Luther King said, we can't make people have good morals. We can't. I can't, let's say I get resources. Let's say I get food stamps. You can't make me use my food stamps to buy groceries for my house. What you can do is provide me with the stamps. And I have to make that decision. So in essence, what we're talking about, and just all together, what we're talking about is a level of it's a self-motivated thing, bro. It's generally a free will, but you have to have the education that comes along with living this life. And as a homeless man, there are things I needed to learn and I still need to learn that I'm really, really struggling and striving. One of those things, and this is one of the biggest things I deal with now, and this is a personal thing, saying no and meaning it. Because you have to not only say no to others, you also have to say no to yourself. And that's very difficult because nobody wants to hear no. So you're trying, especially if you're trying to be what people pleaser, if you will. You have to tell people no and mean it, because it's in not only, sometimes it's not only in your benefit, it's in their benefit as well. So with all of that said, man, I really want to jump off into one other thing. Well, two other things, actually. One of those things is the collective. And the second is the Our Calling books. I don't know if anybody in the city has seen these little booklets. There are little booklets with that say Help I'm Homeless on them. They have resources of where an individual who is homeless could go if they needed to get a shower, if they needed to get food, if they needed to get different resources, period, in the city of Dallas. They could go there. We originally, or Our Calling originally, printed one book. And I think it's important that you take a look at this if you have the opportunity. But now we have another one. Wayne, would you kind of tell us a little bit about that?
So I'm going to piggyback on what you said before. One of the things that makes Our Calling a little different is we don't do any case management. We have a mentoring program. Because as somebody meanders through the million choices in life, they need a personal friend that can walk with them and help think logically through it. We're not telling people what to do. We're not telling them where to spend their money or what to do. But we have a mentoring program so that one man can sit with one man and they can share some of their struggles and they can maybe provide a little wisdom through those choices in life. And that's really where the book came from. So years ago, we started collecting a list of resources of where we could refer people to, because nobody meets every need. And there's certain needs that you don't want to meet. You want to send them to that place down the street. And so we started collecting resources probably 10 or 15 years ago, a list, and it's become the website, helpimhomeless.com. We get hits on that from all over the country. We get people that call us from all over the U.S. I'm in L.A., I'm in Detroit, I'm in Kansas, I'm in Topeka, you know, wherever. And in Dallas, we wanted to make a printed version of that. And we went to every nonprofit in Dallas and said, give us your list of referrals. And most of them, it's this 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper that's been photocopied so many times you can't read it. And half the numbers are wrong. It's just lines on it or handwritten. You know, it's been scribbled on and taped up over and reprinted. And so we wanted to create something that was handy, could fit in your pocket, that the fonts were bigger. We talk about a lot of the needs of the homeless community. The average person we're seeing, and we touch about 2,500 individuals a week. The average person we're seeing is between 40 and 60. So we wanted to print something that a 40 to 60-year-old could read. So it's bigger fonts. It's got some color in it, so it's easy to follow along. Many of our friends are dyslexic or they have reading problems, so we wanted it to be easy to understand. This is not the end-all of homeless answers, but this is the 50 most accessible service providers for the homeless. Right. Not just the biggest ones, not the ones we call the best, but the 50 most accessible. So where can I sleep today? Where can I eat today? Where can I get my tooth pulled? Where can I go if I'm pregnant or I need STD testing or I need a job training? Where can I go? And so We printed the first batch earlier this year, and you know, we've made a lot of revisions. Internally, we're on version 19G, but
he said 19G.
Yeah, yeah. And so right now, it's we've distributed over 15,000 copies of this. We've been asked by Denton County, Collin County, Tarrant County, and now places outside of Texas on how to make one of these for their area. And it is a handy, it's actually printed on special paper, so if it gets wet, it won't fall apart, and the pages won't stick together. It's got some icons that are easy to read and understand for folks that don't read very well. And it can show you where you can go. Where can you go to help? Because you recognize that people have a felt need, and then they have a real need. So someone comes up and says, hey, I just need $2 to go to McDonald's because I'm hungry. Well, McDonald's doesn't meet a lot of real needs. They meet a couple of felt needs. They serve food, and mm-hmm. some would question the quality of that. Yes. And they have a toilet, and some would question the cleanliness of that. But anyway, they have a toilet and food, okay? But the service providers in this book meet a lot more than just food and toilets, because yes. people need a lot more than that. And so we want to point people to meet real needs. So, for example, you may go to one of those places in there and get something to eat and still use their toilet, but they want to talk to you about getting into mental health care and when's the last time you connected with your family. And if you're a vet, we can connect you with VA resources. And maybe let's talk about spiritual issues, or let's talk about the physical issues you have that you need to go to the hospital for. And let's talk about low-income housing. Let's talk about drug addiction. Let's talk about some of those tough issues, which only comes from personal relationships.
Quick story, Wayne. This is an awesome book, and I'm sure you've heard that countless times. Just yesterday, we were working with a young lady at the help desk here at the library, and she's pregnant, and she was in need of shelter. I told her to come over to my desk. We start calling shelters, and this was the book that I used to get those numbers. I know our AmeriCorps members, they use this.
What was
this
it, 19F?
Awesome. 19G, is it? 19G?
On the back it says version 1.2. That's what the public sees.
Well, this is really great. And I see a stack of them right here on the tables. I hope you're going to donate those to the library.
Yeah, those are for y'all.
Okay.
Let me tell you, the new edition, it's interesting. So many people have asked about this. So DART wanted a page.
Yeah.
Okay. DART is actually carrying these. They called us today to put in an order to buy some more. They're giving these to DART bus drivers and DART officers. The VA wanted a page because the VA is doing so much with the homeless, and we wanted to be able to communicate their needs. You mentioned a pregnant woman. This new edition has a list of new pregnancy resources where a pregnant woman can go and get checked in prenatals and stuff, so the different pregnancy resource centers in the area, as well as this has a couple of new clinics that have been added to us, as well as a couple of new places to go get HIV testing and HIV resources for the homeless. So this is not a book to shove. Again, we're a Christian organization. This is not to shove Jesus down someone's throat, although I'm a pastor, and so I wrote something about Jesus in here. But this is to point our homeless friends to some of the service providers that can help them best. And again, the biggest list is on our website. There's about 250 resources on there, that helpemhomeless.com, which is on the front. But the book is the 50 most accessible service providers in Dallas for the homeless. And it's been a unique opportunity. I'll let you in on a secret. We're working on another version of this that'll go on your iPhone or your iPad or your Android really? Device. So we're building this into an app.
An app?
That not only will show you where's the closest service provider, but where's the closest one to where you're standing.
Right.
Okay. Awesome. So where's the closest shelter to where we are? You know, because you may look on here and say there's a shelter, but not realize that one's 5 miles away. Where's the closest place for a pregnant woman to go today? And not only that, it's going to be have a reporting tool on there for us. So, you know, we go to 1,200 places in Dallas looking for the homeless. So let's say you walk around White Rock Creek on a regular basis, so you like to jog around the lake or you like to ride the bus, and you notice there's a tent in the woods, and you know someone's living back there, and you don't want to call the police and get that, because what happens is the guy gets kind of booted out of there. But you want to call some people that will go check on that individual and make sure they're okay. This app will have a reporting feature, so you can let us know where that place is so we can go visit them. We get calls from businesses all the time, say, you know, someone's living in the dumpster behind my business, and we don't want to call the cops and get them in trouble, but can somebody come help them? It'll have a reporting tool. And also have some guidelines that we've put together on what's the best way to approach people and what's the best way to set up boundaries so, you know, nobody's taking advantage of somebody.
You know what, Wayne? Those resources, like you said, there's a felt need, and then there's a different type of need. The resources of being able to know how to approach an individual who is homeless, being, you know, a regular or a law-abiding citizen in apprehension of trying to talk to somebody who is, would sometimes, as a homeless individual, I've considered myself a social outcast in a sense. So that's a need right there. That's a need that really, really sticks out to me. And I really, really want to thank you. Thank you, man, for coming on the show. Thanks for the app. I mean, because just like the guy, now he has the laptop, now he can have the app, you know?
So the big question is, when is it going to launch?
The app?
Yeah.
Well, we're currently in development.
Okay.
And you'll know, as soon as it gets out, we'll make a big deal about it. We're working on the iPhone version first, iPhones and iPads, and then if that goes well, we'll pull out the Android version as well. It's a unique endeavor for us, and it's just like this book. We don't make any money off of this. I'll tell you, these actually cost us a little bit less than we sell them for. It's like Tom's shoes. So they cost us about half as much to print as we sell them for on our website. So for every one you buy to give away, it pays for one for us to give away. See? So but it's not a money-making thing at all on this directory. And the app as well, it's never a money-making thing. But it enables us to serve more people. It enables us to do something that's important to us, and that's to engage the rest of Dallas to help our homeless friends as well. We can't crawl under every bridge. We can't meet every need. But if we can really empower and enable the rest of the community to come beside homeless individuals. There was a second thing you asked me about. One was a directory, the collective. The collective is a group that's been formed between a number of organizations, Christian organizations that are coming together on a regular basis to share ideas, to pray for each other. These are nonprofits that work with the homeless that do discipleship. Most of them do discipleship in-house. So places, you know, that people can live in. But it's a great opportunity for folks that serve the same community of people. Because honestly, every homeless organization in town and every service provider in town that helps the homeless sees some of the same people. You know, they may go from place to place. And so it's a unique opportunity to, again, create some collaboration between efforts of organizations.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So before I leave, or before we leave, I want to, first off, I want to thank you, Mr. Wayne, for coming in on the show. I know I had you on the show before, and we had a lot of dysfunction before the show started. but you came and you gave your best and you left it all on the table. Is there anything else you want to talk about before you leave?
Well, yeah, we have the biggest Thanksgiving Day event in Dallas for the homeless in a couple weeks.
I forgot about that.
I don't know when this will go out. Maybe Ryan's up to that when this will be released. But it's beautiful. I mean, we'll have well over 1,000 folks there, and it's unique. You know, we don't believe in plexiglass and rubber gloves. That doesn't communicate love. So we have moms and dads and kids, families come and sit at tables with homeless guests having family meals together, which is a unique families loving families kind of opportunity.
Last year was my best Thanksgiving, man.
And I
owe it to you guys because I actually went out there to Dallas Theological Seminary.
That's right in East Dallas. That's where we
hosted, yeah. And somebody from Calvary's Church out in Irving, I had some beef with that church because the church found out about my criminal background and kicked me out. And I was like, I really, really was wondering, why would a church kick me out? Well, what happened with the family is the family told me that they were from that church, and I talked to them about it, and the healing experience happened for me during Thanksgiving last year, man. And thank you. So please tell us more about what are you guys doing this year. Same place?
Same place, Dallas Theological Seminary, 3909 Swiss Avenue. And we're expecting a whole lot more people this year, so we're still trying to work on transportation, buses to help bring people in. But yeah, we're giving out coats and blankets, and we're going to lay hands and pray for people. We're going to watch the Cowboys game, you know, whatever football's on that day, and serve tons of pie and play dominoes and 42 and all chess and all the fun stuff. But really, it's that family meal, because so many people that are not homeless look at the homeless like they're scary and crazy. Or they have some fear, especially, you know, a mom with kids will see a homeless guy. And, you know, these are not trolls under the bridge that are going to eat your children. These are people that are just in a bad situation. And it's a unique opportunity for a family to sit with a homeless friends and just love them and pray for them and get to know them. I have to be honest and apologize, because for some of our volunteers and just the reality, some of them have never had a sit-down meal with someone of a different color, which I find a little offensive. But it's a beautiful sharing opportunity for people to love. And some of our homeless friends, it's the first time they sat down with a family in a long time, because some of them are so estranged from their real family. It's a beautiful time of healing. There's lots of tears. There's lots of turkey. But it's a great time together just to love on folks. And it's a fun gig.
Yeah, man. It was very, very beautiful last year, because like you said, some people hadn't sat with their fam. I hadn't sat with my fam in probably 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
And
that's hard. That's got to hurt really bad.
Man, and actually, I wanted to actually drive to New Orleans this season, but that's not gonna happen. So it is a very, very beautiful thing. Anything else though you want to share?
You know, I just love Jesus, and he's awesome. He's totally transformed my life from the guy I used to be. And I see the potential of what God can do in someone's life when I look in the mirror every day. I'm not an addict anymore. I'm not a guy on his way to living a foolish life. I can be a different man, and that's only because of the gospel. The story of the gospel is that we're broken and dysfunction to the, you know, final degree, where only God can fix us. And Jesus came to live a perfect life for us so that we can have a new life. And the gospel is relationships. And it's not just a relationship between you and God. It's a relationship between you and other believers. You know, our brother here earlier was talking about he's had some bad experiences with Christians. I have to admit, sometimes as a Christian, I make Jesus look dumb because of things I've done and things I've said, and we all do that. But you find that true in every case. There are some homeless people that make the rest of homeless people look silly. There are some employees of Dallas Library that make the rest of the library look silly. You know, we have that opportunity every day to make people look like fools, or to be a good ambassador and a good representative of whose name we carry. And so I just love Jesus, want people to know about him. But more than that, we want to invite people into a relationship with God through loving our homeless friends. So we want to invite every homeless person in Dallas to come see us every day. And it's not just for a hot meal. It's not just to take a shower and get some clothes and to sit around and maybe go to a Bible study or an AA meeting. It's really to sit down and talk about what's really hurting, because we're people that really care.
Thank you. Thank you for showing up. Mr. Malcolm, I'm extremely grateful for the position here at the library and the responsibility you have taken upon yourself. You're extremely knowledgeable in a lot of different processes, and you've become a very, very personal colleague of mine, a very good friend, and I appreciate that. I want to thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And I look forward to seeing you on many more. Your insight and your professionalism has shown through.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, Rashad. I appreciate that.
Calvin, I can't do it, Calvin, without you. I don't have the power. So I appreciate everybody's input. Mr. Wayne?
I got one more thing.
Yes, sir.
I just got a text message from one of our staffers. Today is the coldest day of the year in Dallas. It was 27 degrees. And today is the day that they're choosing to clear out a bunch of homeless camps. Before I got here, they tore out the ones under Malcolm X. They just cleared out the ones under I-30. I just don't see the logic in that. You know, people come in to see us, they get coats and blankets because they're cold outside, because they can't get into a shelter because they don't have the ID or they have a criminal background. And then a day later, on the coldest day of the year, the city shows up and throws their stuff away. Guys, the problem is huge. And the problem is, you know, we see about 8,000 to 10,000 people sleeping outside every night. It's not just about a couple hundred people that show up at the library on a day or come up over to our calling. The problem is, it's a disease. Homelessness is not a disease. But the hurt that's caused people to be in that situation from one reason or another. No, every homeless person is not an addict, and everyone didn't lose their job, and everyone, but whatever has caused that problem is systemic, and it's huge, and it hurts. And days like today, when it's below freezing, and you're sleeping outside, and you walk back to your place to get under your blanket, and someone's throwing them away, and you know you cannot get into any shelter, because of who you are, maybe what you did, maybe what you don't have in your pocket. It sucks. And I just would love to live in a world where this didn't happen. But because it does, we have to be there every day. We have to be open. We have to love people as long as it takes.
I agree. I definitely agree. And we had this conversation recently, didn't we? Me and Malcolm had this conversation about that very same thing, about will I always be doing this? Will I always be an advocate? I have to. As long as there is a social system, there will be social injustice, and then somebody has to fight for social justice. And that's something we have to do.
I'm glad to hear you've made sure you found your answer.
Thank you. I want to thank everybody for listening to the Street View podcast today. It's been a blessing, bro. This is one of the first podcasts that almost brought me to tears. So if y'all don't mind, I want to go ahead and talk to my creator and exit this thing. Father God in heaven, right here, right now, in this moment, you are glorified. And I ask God in the name of Jesus Christ that you continue to be glorified in many other moments like this one is perpetuated in our lives, God, where we're brought to a position where we recognize who's in control. Thank you for being in control. I'm grateful for your love, God. And I ask that as we leave and separate from each other here, God, that you might go with us, God. We know that you are the only one who is able to do that, God. So we ask that you would go with us, be with us, God, and help us to do exactly what you would have us to do, God, so that your presence is felt amongst everybody, everywhere. This is a prayer of sincerity because of your Son, because of Christ Jesus. Hallelujah. And amen.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Street View. You can visit us online at streetviewpodcast.com. Tune us in again next time for more discussion.